Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Once again, the weather is up, the grass is flying and the silage has started. And in general, farmers are happy campers. Shout out to our supporters, AXA, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks for helping us to make this show happen. First up, let's hear from our specialists around the country. We're going to start with the quick fire round. Adam, Darren and Aidan, remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, good few questions in here for you. You must be upsetting some lads. Three questions. Ask Adam, would he routinely dose all cattle purchased for worms, or what is best practice?
Yeah, Jack, I suppose it's a difficult one that. I suppose, right, best practice is probably fecal sample to see if there's a burden there, and if there's a burden, then you dose. There's actually a program there available in Animal Health Ireland at the moment, along with your vet. If you go onto the Animal Health Ireland website, you can register for a free consultation with your vet and a free fecal sample. It's a drop-down menu. You select your vet, and your vet basically makes contact with you, and they'll come out and do that fecal sample. Having the management knows this week, Jack, it's a little, you have to be careful when you're buying in cattle that you don't maybe go in with an ivermectin-based trench or dose that you kill every worm about the place. Sometimes you better go in with a levamazole, a yellow drench, maybe in terms of not killing every worm in that animal, because a really big kill can maybe lead to a big pressure on the animal. So look at, I'd say the TASER, that program is probably the first step there, and get that fecal sample done.
Okay, good man. Thanks for that. A second question for Adam. Ask Adam, I've whiteheads for the first time that are now 600 kilos and can't go to the mart. And I can't go to the mart with them. Factory won't go flat, and only 485 plus bonuses is the price they are giving me. Should I hold tough for a few weeks?
Yes, well, are the bullocks or heifers?
Bullocks, I think.
They're probably 5 or 10 cents off there, Jack, I'd say, at 485. That price has definitely moved on this week. Big appetite out there for Hereford and Angus this week, and I'd say base price of minimum 495. So you're definitely 10 cents off. And to be honest, looking at where the beef price is going, I think it's going to go more. So I'd be in no panic to sell them if they're 600. Just, I suppose, watch the fat covers. That you're not going to miss out on a 4+, that you're going to miss out on quality assurance or drop down a keg on the quality assurance. So just watch that. But I'd be in no hurry to sell those yet.
Good man, hold tough. Third question for Adam. Adam was talking about €250 million for organics. But if a heap of suckler, beef and sheep farmers sign up, is there enough of money to go around?
Actually, I suppose, what's a heap, I suppose, Jack? You're no matter what level, you know, you're never going to get huge buy-in, I suppose, into organics for a long number of years, I don't think. That's going to be a long, long play. And I think 250 million is I would reckon, maybe Darren's a different opinion, but I reckon way over what will be subscribed to it in the next couple of years. I think that funding is really, there's a lot of funding there to draw down.
Okay, leave it at that. Back to you in a minute, Adam. Darren, ask two questions for you, Darren. Ask Darren, I'm trying to predict when lambs will go. They are on good grass, an ad-lib meal, and most are weighing between 26 and 30 kilos now.
Yeah, so Jack, that lib meat one is I suppose the variable there, and depending on how much they're eating, like lambs and good grass, and if they're getting a small bit of meat, they'll be expecting, if they aren't getting any meat on good grass, coming up to that sort of weight, you'll be saying they'll be doing 250, 280 grams, sort of average. But like dim lambs and adding meat, Jack, could be doing 300, 350, 400 grams a day. Particularly the lambs that'll sit in around the creep feeder, won't go off grazing. It'll all depend on intake, but like what I'd be saying is dim lambs will motor along well, and also like he'll probably be drafting, he or she will be drafting dim at 38, 40, 42 kilos if they're young lambs that are driving on. Now, he didn't mention the weight. I presume they're lambs sort of 10, 12, 13 weeks of age. So it'll all depend on that. But look,
as you say, if you're saying 400 grams a day, Darren, let's say that we'll give them the top 400 grams a day by 7 days a week, that's 2.8 kilos a week. So between 2 and 3 kilos a week is what he needs to put on. So they're 30, let's say they're 30 kilos now, 3 kilos a week, they'll be 39 kilos in 3 weeks' time, give or take.
Exactly. He could have picked lambs out of that in 3 weeks. Yeah. And there might be lambs, there will invariably be lambs in it that won't be fit for 6 or 7 weeks, right, because they don't need as much feed. But what you will find is, as he starts to pull lambs, other lambs will get in eaten, and that they'll there'll be a bit of a difference as well.
Okay, right? Second quick fire, Darren, and I have to edit this because there's bad language included. So there is no chance I am going to go to the trouble of bagging wool from Horny Yo's and deliver it to the merchant at 5 cents per kilo. I read an article, and I think Darren had last year, on composting it. What's the story with that, Darren?
I can imagine what the words of the expletives used there, Jack, is, because
beep, beep, beep. Yeah, he's not happy with the price of wool and the horny oars. These are probably for a fraud. But talk to me. Composting.
I had a bit in last year because it absolutely killed me to be looking at, say, posts on social media or wherever it was about farmers and the dumping wool, or Ginny, the even better one was trying to burn wool, and it's a natural fire retardant. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But look, if you compost wool, there will be the main two elements in wool are sulfur and nitrogen. I was actually talking to Gary Gillespie from UCD this week, and it's something we'll come back with next week, because I'm due to have a focus in next week. UCD are looking at hydrolysis in wool. Basically, it's taking out all the nutrients in it. The figures he was talking about is somewhere between 100 grams and 160 grams of nitrogen in a fleece. Now, that doesn't seem a lot, but he was talking about this. There's the potential over, say, the whole national flock that there could be 26, 27,000 tons of can equivalent, say, taken out. But look, to go back to the question, put that wool into, say, your muck heap, leave it there for about 2 or 3 months. It'll degrade naturally, so it will. If it was mixed up, it'll degrade quicker, so it will. But look, you're not going to go to much of the trouble of that. But put it in the muck heap, and there will be a value added to it from sulfur and from nitrogen.
Thanks, Darren. Aidan, one quick fire for you. Ask Aidan, with the mixed weather, it's hard to take out bales. Would he fertilise it again and let it bulk up for another few weeks? That's as much information as I have, Aidan. Talk to me.
Yeah, Jack, it's a great question, because a lot of farmers are in the same boat, you know, with the mixed weather that's forecast again for next week. It's going to be difficult to get silage cut, but I suppose really to answer that question, all depends on what the stocking rate is, i.e. what the demand is. So if you're already very highly stocked or you have a very high demand, I mean, closing up ground for a longer period will mean that you're going to be at that stock, higher stocking rate for much longer, which is risky then if growth rate drops. So we haven't enough information probably to answer the question definitively. I'd be more of the view, like, you know, set a sustainable stocking rate now, which is in around, you know, a demand of 60 to 70 kilos per day, I suppose, which is in around, you know, less than 4 cows per hectare if you're a dairy farmer, and fertilize to achieve that growth rate, you know, and then take out surpluses as they come. But I'd be keen now, any chance to get to reduce the stocking rate by taking out those paddocks.
Thanks, Aidan. Adam, coming back to you. there's a certain cut about you. There's a kind of a sharpness about you. There's a shine off you. Like, are you somewhere where we're not? Like, where are you? Like,
I'm in Balmoral, Jack. I'm north of the border. I'm like Mrs. Doyle up here. I'm drawing tea all day, lads, up here in the stand. I had a great couple of days up here. In fairness, a lot of visitors, a lot of people into the stand. And look, it's great to be back around ringside. The Farmers Journal stand is right on the cattle lawn in Balmoral. We have a great view of the cattle judging going on up there. So a real busy couple of days.
I thought with the red background was the Aviva you were in, like, you know what I mean? I'm watching young O'Mahony.
We were there, Jack. We were there. We had two sad boys coming down the road. And in fairness, it was brilliant. Ah, geez, an unbelievable match. It was super.
It was serious, wasn't it?
Even if you're from Cabin, if we were from Cabin, we felt like frauds up there shouting. But anyway, we still shouted anyway.
You were frauds, like, you were frauds. But did O'Mahony have some game, didn't he? Like?
Unbelievable. Ah, he left it all out. They all left it all out there, in fairness. An awful way to go out. But anyway, somebody had to win, I suppose.
Yeah. And they got 1 point closer than poor old Ulster did. Like, I mean, it was a pity, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, look, what can you do when he march on? Like, speaking of marching on, Adam, like the march trade is definitely marching on. Like, you have it on the front page and you have it in a couple of other places in the country. There's another pep in the step in the beef trade, is there?
Yeah, we're hitting record prices now, Jack. The march trade, I suppose factories have exhausted all supplies of finished cattle on farms and they've turned to march and they've really lit up the march trade in the last couple of days. Speaking to a couple of march managers, you know, €3 a kilo, €3.20 a kilo for sort of finished cattle up at 750, 760 kilos. And we just sort of worked that back. If we take the average sort of prices off that MAR bids analysis this week and work them back into a deadweight equivalent, you know, we're up at sort of 560, 570, 580 in some cases of a beef price. So that tells you one thing, and that means the base price can go more because factory agents are out paying the equivalent of that in March, and yet they're not paying that to farmers that go into the factory. So there's about €150 ahead of a premium there in March at the moment in terms of selling cattle in the March as opposed to the factory.
That's some shift, like, you know. I mean, and did the beef trade move, Anton, this week then?
Yeah, a little bit, probably up another maybe 5 cents. And again, it's Donegal out in front and maybe the laggers behind sort of improving up behind. And look, there's all sorts of prices going there behind the scenes, Jack. I tell you, when you ring your agent and get a price and get a quote, you definitely don't take that first quote. You bargain hard, you sell hard. The ball is at the farmer's foot. Really, really important now in the next couple of weeks to sell hard because the cattle aren't there. If we look across Europe, Jack, you know, bulls in Germany again this week, 565, 570 a kilo. We're 30, 40 cents behind that price. Our price can definitely go more. Like in terms of talking to Kirmelia in the north as well, the very same, you know, heifers up at sort of 560, 565 euro equivalent up there. So it's all pretty positive. Talking to Gavin Hill as well in Scotland, they're seeing some great prices over there as well. So there's no, I can't see anything on the horizon at the moment, Jack, in terms of impending beef price for the next month or two anyway, definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, from talking to farmers there at Balmoral, Adam, like, are they in good form? Like, we know those sucked-up beef farmers, are they in good form or are they kind of still under pressure, like, with the cost being so high?
Actually, they're pretty cautious, I suppose, Jack, in terms of cattle prices. They're getting on well with cattle at the moment, but it's gone back out the door in fertilizer and it's gone back out the door in feed. A lot of worries coming up to next winter, I suppose. What sort of a silage crop will be cut now in the next couple of weeks? And what will that mean, we'll say, for next winter in terms of buying cattle or selling cattle? And meal prices. Meal is on the tips of everybody's tongue up here. You're talking €500 in some cases. You know, one guy was telling me there he can forward sell green barley at the minute at €350 down south. Barley at the moment costing €400, you know, finishing rations up at €450. So it's a little bit concerning in terms of the feed costs associated with that, you know.
And I mean, just coming back to what with the organics job and that quick fire question and last week's show in terms of the organics and the front page and et cetera and that kind of thing. And I mean, I mean, it's like organic meal is €1,000 a ton, Adam. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, you're, as you say, and rightly so, you're giving out about €500 a ton. But if it is €1,000 a ton, like, I mean, it'd be hard to look at it, no matter what kind of an organic beef price you were getting.
It would, Jack, and you'd have to have a long, hard think about it. As I said to you last week, a lot of those guys aren't actually paying, we'll say, they're not buying meal in that organic system. They're actually selling weanlings conventionally or selling store cattle conventionally. There's very little meal. Some of them are red clover silage that first winter, so there's very little meal going in. But if you were going finishing and going the whole hog, you would have to go that meal system, and there's where your costs really start to come in.
Yeah. Talk to me about you know you're in Balmoral show, one of the early shows, one of the first shows. We talked about Newmarket on Fergus last week. Like, I mean, it's you've a focus on shows and showing you know, this week. Like, I mean, there's a really nice kind of a good feel to it. Like, there's a really good kind of a livestock handling piece to it. Like, I mean, it's a positive vibe, isn't it, really, for the livestock sector.
everybody raring to go, Jack, in terms of, you know, a couple of great shows down south. You had Thomastown, you had the Kingdom Fair in Kerry, and you had Newmarket and Fergus, three of the first shows of the 134 that will take place. We have every show listed in the paper this week in terms of what's going to take place over the next couple of months. We have a couple of big championships profile. We have our own, we'll say, Young Stock Person All-Ireland Championship. We've got the Aldi Irish Angus in championships in Iverk, and we've got a message from the ASA president. We've got a lot of stuff inside that shows and showing. And I guess everybody, look, you can feel it up here, the excitement in Balmoral, talking to people. And look, there's some big names up here as well. A lot of Irish cattle actually come up here. There's one line of cattle, Jack, in the commercial section up here. Just a line of cattle. I think there's six or seven cattle in it. 52,000 sterling. That line of commercial cattle costing. The 18,000 heifer is actually here. You'd be sweating going out with her into the ring. It'll be interesting to see how she goes. But yeah, look at everybody really, really glad to get back into the ring up here. Very, very big crowds in Balmoral all week.
Nothing like the sweating your man was doing over in Carlisle when he was bidding 180,000 for a bull. What in the name of God?
No, I wasn't, Jack. It's a fairy tale story, this, right? The guy that had this bull, first time exhibitor, imagine he'll never see the same again, or maybe he will, but anyway, look, it's a dream start. He's a professional, what they call a cattle fitter or a clipper. So if I was selling animals, I'd get him in and we'll say he'd do up my cattle for me in terms of production sales or the special sales. He'd done a job for the Sarkley cattle herd 2 years ago. And the guy that owns that, the Penny's family, came to him and said, look, you've done a great job for us. Take a flush of any one of the cows there in the herd in terms of a goodwill gesture for doing the job really well. He took a flush. He flushed it to Ambertine Elgin, and this is the first egg out of that flush. Holy at 180,000 and 10,000 bids, Jack. Imagine you'd want to look at it. It was senior league stuff in terms of 10,000 bids. Around 100,000, the auctioneer, he went up into 10,000 bids. And he said when he was at 180, when he stuck at 180, he said, I'll take a small one. A small one was 5,000. But anyway, great to see it.
That's like winning the Greyhound Derby with a bad dog. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a chance you could be caught there for the rest of your life. It's going to cost you a lot more money.
Yeah,
like, you know?
yeah. He's actually an Irish connection. James McKay, Northern Ireland, bred the father of him, Ambertine Elgin. And it was actually an Irish judge, Pat Greeny, that tapped him out as overall champion. In fairness, he got it right. Tapped him out as overall champion the day before. So Irish bred cattle done very well over there. Limousine genetics are doing well over there.
Silage series, Adam, for silage fever, as I said at the top of the show, is kicking into gear. The rule up north was you had to have the first cut in before the Balmoral show. Talk to me in terms of your silage series and what's the kind of idea behind it.
Yeah, sure. The Leicester team got together last week and we had a chat about it, and we just felt that maybe we should start to focus on silage given the importance of it, and maybe some farmers, you know, maybe holding back on fertiliser and stuff. And we just said we'd profile four farmers. We've Tommy Holmes in Mayo, we've William Jones in Longford, we have Kieran Henry in Sligo, and we've Sean Hayes in Clare. So we're going to visit them or check in with them every couple of weeks for the next couple of months just to see how it's going. So all those people have fertiliser out, obviously. Some of them are gearing up for cutting. Interesting enough to talk to some of them, they're saying that in terms of meal prices going very dear, they want a real good cut of silage. So some of them are actually thinking about going next week to cut a real good cut of silage for weanland. Interesting to see that. Probably quantity will be low, but quality will be good. And then we'll follow them for second cut. And I suppose budgets, that's what it's all about this week. We have a really good planner on that page in relation to what you need for the winter, what you have in the yard at the moment, and what you need to make, and just follow that through. I guess it's about taking action now, not next November, December.
Most of them could be bales. If they were going for a real light first cut at it, they might think of bales rather than the pit job.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Sean Hayes and Claire and I was going for a pit, but some of the other guys are going to go for bales because obviously it'll be cheaper maybe in terms of a real light cut. And sometimes contractors will do deals for that real light cut to get in early. But again, weather will dictate that, I guess, next week as to what happens.
Yeah. Adam, we'll leave you back to the tea. Thanks for that.
Thanks.
Darren, look, you're not in Balmoral yet by the looks of things.
No, Jack, not yet. No, we will take a trip up there, so we will. But
do you know what I was talking to? I was talking to a Clare man last night, and he said we were talking about the hurling now, and we're going to have gone from rugby, but we were talking about the hurling, and he said, without a shadow of a doubt, Limerick are number one, but Galway are a very close second, he says, to Limerick.
Look, you'd have to say it. I don't think Shefflin would like to be given that tag. Sure, look at Kilkenny down through the years, they always come from maybe out of nowhere. Look at it, they had the favourites tag a lot of the time, but they were happy if they were going bad to come in underneath the radar. And Look, no one knows. Yes, like no. Henry Shepman's brought a lot of buzz around. He's good young players. He's freshened up the job, and he probably will bring a bit of cuteness that might have been lacking there before. And if the Kilkenny game is anything to go by, you'd say that might be there or a bit
it's
more.
A nice, it was a nice win to get. Like the argument I was making, I was putting Waterford ahead of, you know, maybe on a par with Limerick, like, you know what I mean. But my man, and then I said maybe even Clare, and I was putting Galway into fourth place, like, you know what I mean. But he was adamant. He says no. He says Galway are better than that, because he said you know, as a Clare man, he said, listen, he says we never like playing Galway anyway, no matter what. But how good they are, like, you know, the kind of, there's not much between them.
You can think that, and you can think Everton is rosy, and then Galway let you down. And like, look, I know Waterford are similar, they're like that. Whether or not you put them number two, I don't know, but like, definitely there's a bit of an appetite and a bit of a buzz around.
Darren, talk to me. We better get down to business. I mean, I talked to Grass Growth with Adam, and I'll talk to Aidan again and Sean McMahon on it. Like, I mean, there's Sean McMahon, we'll play his clip there afterwards, but he's saying there's a nice bit of variability in it across the country, you know, that it's not all 100 kilos plus per day, you know, I mean, there's variation. Are you seeing that on sheep farms?
Jack, there's probably more variation on the sheep side of things. No, sorry, Adam would have a good bit of that as well, but probably more than anything, given some of the marginal nature of the ground sheep are in, the fact that there is less fertilizer put out, and then you have some top performing, heavily stocked farmers, say, doing every bit as good a job as relative to dairy farmers with regards to reseeding, fertilizer. Some of them farms have recorded growth rates from 70 to 100 kilos. On individual paddocks, Jack, they've topped 100 kilos. You won't have 100 on average this week, but like them closed paddocks or the paddocks with a cover on it, they're motoring on ahead. Put that in contrast to somebody that hasn't fertilizer out in the rest of Ireland, where it's been maybe grass has been a bit slower, had a lot of rainfall in the last week, and growth rates are somewhere between 20 and 40 kilos of dry matter per day. Now, both of them could still create the same challenges, because a farmer stocked to 13 euros per hectare growing 70 or 80 kilos could have, say, a surplus of grass developing. A farmer stocked to 3 or 4 euros and going 40 kilos could have a similar surplus. So I think it's about horses for courses and coming in and acting quick. Like a couple of things I was sort of saying this week is that if you're in a situation where there's a big surplus developing, you need to act quick. Get in, take that grass out of the rotation and don't delay, because other years, if you delayed too much or if you got caught with weather, well, you just come in with another bag of fertilizer and you boost on and you compensate. That's not a runner this year. Like, so it's to take that out quick and use your strip wires to try and maintain quality.
The only thing I'll say, Darren, is it's tricky in the weather. I don't know where about, you know, in terms of the west, how but like it's very mixed weather in terms of trying to maybe get a day's wilt into a kind of a light crop even. Is it as tricky up with G?
Ah, sure. Look, it's more so, Jack. Like, there wouldn't have been anything really done over this way. Like we'd have a lot of rain, I suppose, in the last, say, maybe 3-4 days, there'd be an inch of rain down. Like, so ground conditions even would be tricky on, say, some sucker farmers have said this, they start marking the ground. Now, look, that'll change this time of the year. There's a fair winds. Wednesday, Thursday, there was drying a place as quick as rain was falling. But it's just something to be mindful of, all of those things. Yeah. Like, on the opposite side of things, Jack, the fellas that haven't spread fertilizer and are talking about spreading fertilizer, Genie, now is the time to get it out, because there's no point spreading it after you've missed the peak growth. And for anyone buying it, there is deals to be done. There is a bit of reduction in prices because the volume is just starting moving at the moment.
Darren, coming back to the kind of quick fire question, I suppose, and tying in the grass growth rate, etc., and what's happening. Like, I mean, lambs killing overweight, meal or concentrates at 4.50 a ton, lamb prices over 8 euros a kilo. Like, I mean, some lads, is it butcher lambs they're going for, or is it factory lambs? Like, you know what I mean? Or what are they mixed up in terms of where they want to go? Like,
Yeah, sure, look, Jack, you'd be scratching your head sort of at both elements of that, like, because some fellas have said, oh, I'll wait and land prices will push on. Like, Genie, like a concentrated 450, because look, the reality is the lambs coming out at the moment have a nice bit of meal. There isn't too many fellas that are in a position to push lambs out at this time of year off grass basis. That's reality. So if you start there, lambs have got a fair bit of meal. This isn't, I suppose, the factories haven't given out about a batch of 20 lambs and two lambs coming in and the overweight, because at the start of the season, you'll always get a couple of lambs, or you'll have a fella that the couple of single lambs he won't have gone and drafted them, or that type of thing. This is batches coming in, killing 23 and 24 kilos. And like, really,
this time of the year, like, Jesus,
at this time, exactly. There is that on one hand, and then some of the factory procurement fellas said that this week they're starting to see maybe some lambs coming in lacking a bit of flesh, for fellas have, say, maybe normally ad-lib meal and pull back too much in the meal, and maybe lambs just lacking that bit of power, that the sunshine hasn't really been there to drive them on. They have performed well in the last 2 weeks, but maybe just being picked a bit too quick. And that's the other side of it. But generally it's the overweight over fleshed ones. Like, and what I'd be saying to lads is, if you think you have that, even go to sample or to weigh up whether the butcher trade is a better option or the wholesale trade to try and maximize your return. There is a good market trade there at the moment as well. But the long-term message has to be that if we want to sustain prices where they're at, or say have a good chance of, there's no point putting free meat into the system. And also, one of the things that the last year that has been very, very good is the carcass trade has been hot. So it's given factories an option that they haven't been boning out as much, which is, I suppose, fed into the fact of tight staff supplies with COVID and everything. So, like, we really need to mind that trade.
Okay. And, I mean, is it the case, Darren, so that some of those guys, as you say, they might have those couple of early singles or something like that, and they haven't a bundle of lambs, they haven't 12, 15 lambs. So maybe they're as well off to them couple of singles to pull them out, we'll say, and aim them for the butcher trade and shove them on a bit, like, even, you know, keep them for another couple of weeks. Is that madness, or is it worth it?
No, sure. Look, it's not, Jack. And I was talking to a very astute farmer this week, and he was going one step further in that he went through, say, his early lambs, and he'd be killing yours as well now. He sort of breeds ageier yos to lamb early. But he was saying that, like, say some factories, depending on what factory, your upper carcass weight is 40 to 45 kilos, and he is yours there, he said, tipping 90, or what he thinks 95, maybe 100 kilos. Yeah. Like, 45 kilos at 4 euros a kilo is 180 in the marts. There's dim sort of yos are making anywhere from 180 to 210. So what he said is he was pulling off the heavier lambs, pulling off the heavier yos, showing them in the mart and killing the other ones, because he's a man that goes to the factory direct. But he said, look, if there's going to be a handful of yos that he gets 150 yos more on, if he gets a tenner ahead and the lambs more, it's a no-brainer, like.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. So, I mean, it's definitely one for lads to study. I mean, the other one for lads to study, Darren, it's the most important job of the year for most guys. Like, and the deadline is fast approaching. Like, it's the application day for the BPS job. Is it on target, or are we behind other years?
Yeah. Sure. Look, we reported there on Wednesday that there was 107, just shy of 107,000 applications in. Like, that was an increase of 23,700 in the week, actually. Like, it's phenomenal work when you think about it. This, now, a lot of them would be individual farmers, but like, advisors are to the mat at the moment. Like, they haven't taken their head out of the computer. And that'll be continue up to Monday. And look, you'll see 127,000 BPS is submitted. They're well on target. Look, at the department are happy. They have their help desk going there right over the weekends, long hours. One second, Jack. It's worth bringing up the number here, actually, because it might be worth.
Definitely. So, this is the helpline. So if you have any issues with the department, you want to make contact with them, like, you know what I mean, this is the number you ring.
Yeah, exactly. So Saturday and Sunday, they're open from 9:30 to 5:00. And on Monday, they're open from 9:15 until 12 midnight Monday night. And it's 057-867-4422 It's well worth looking. It's a great service, because if there's people caught over the weekend on something that they need to get sorted, they can get that sorted.
Yeah. No, Fierce Timely, and obviously the most important job for a lot of farmers this week. There's a new farm environmental study launched, Darren. Like, I mean, is it worth applying for it, or what's in it for farmers?
Yeah, sure, look, we're just coming to terms with it. It was launched on Wednesday, and we're sort of looking at the elements. So essentially, what it is this: if you apply for it, Jack, that and you're eligible for it, is an appointed advisor will come out. They'll walk the farm with you. They'll look at the habitats that are present on the farm. They'll map them. They'll record the condition of them. And that will be submitted back to the departments on record. And you'll get 200 euros for your trouble or for your cooperation in it. During that, say, visit as well, the advisor is meant to, say, teach you a bit about farm habitats that you have, how you can manage them better, what, say, things can be done to enhance them, that type of stuff. So that's the element of it. There's 6,000 places up for grabs. Okay. And look, a lot of farmers have been asking, will it be oversubscribed? How do I get in? There's three elements of it. And I suppose it's a bit like some of the schemes that have been brought out recently, is the department wants a balance of applications across region, farm and enterprise, farm size. And if it's oversubscribed, it'll be on a first-come, first-served basis, given that they have that balance right. So okay, if you're interested, I'd be saying get your application in. You have to put it into agfood.ie by the 27th of May. But look, at that 27th of May, I'd be saying if you have any inkling at all, put it in. The couple of questions I'm getting back, Jack, is this: will this mean that I can't do anything with these areas again? Yeah. Look, if you have something that is a habitat and that is a landscape feature, that should be protected anyway. Like, so if you have a hedgerow, you're not meant to take that out. No. Scrub is different. Scrub isn't a landscape feature. Now, it can be classified as a habitat, but it's not a landscape feature. And I think that some of these, say, the mapping of this will also identify and record what's there, and say going forward. But look, at scrub is the biggest question I'm getting, and that's a habitat, and at the moment it's not a landscape feature, say, for retaining.
Okay, 100%, because there's more details on that in the journal if anyone wants a little bit more information. See the journal for that. But Darren, if the parting message has to be that, listen, if you haven't the BPS and you're watching this, if you haven't it filled in, you have a couple of days to get the job done.
Exactly. And look, if you're not sure, because there's people waiting on land, there's people waiting on deals, get an application in. You can amend it up to 31st of May.
Aidan, I've talked to Darren and Adam, I suppose, about nitrogen. The dairy piece is the very same, I suppose, and it came up in your quickfire question. Like, I mean, nitrogen and putting it on when growth rates are exceptionally high, a lot of farmers won't. We'll cut it back. Or might even skip around. I mean, some of your guys are probably going around farms now and, grazing areas in 18 days and less. Like, there's no need to follow with nitrogen after ever grazing, is there?
I'd be saying six, look at it on a per month basis. So, you need probably around 20 units per month, probably, or 25 units per month. So work out then what your rotation length is and work it out that way. I'd say, Jack, you definitely don't want to be going with your full rate, when you're in these short rounds. Some people on much shorter than 18-day rounds. I was on a farm during the week, and he was on a 9-day round, would you believe? It just happened that paddock was last grazed 9 days ago, which is absolutely crazy. But the growth rate was phenomenal, and the paddock was well fertilized, it was fertile, it was just in a real growthy part of the farm, I suppose, as well, which has a bearing on it. But you wouldn't see that too often, and I suppose you wouldn't want to see it too often either. But look, my advice to farmers is go with about 0.8 of a unit of nitrogen per day if you're relatively highly stocked. So they're the guys that are, ground closed up for silage now on the platform. They're, up there on 4 cows per hectare. If you've got cloned feed, you've got that back to zero. If you're much lower stock, so if you're, if you're nowhere near that kind of a stocking range, and you're always, spreading much less than that, then by all means, continue on that plan. I would be very wary, Jack, of skipping around, maybe not necessarily skipping around entirely, but saying, because grass is growing well, I'm not going to spread any nitrogen now, I'm going to make use of it. That's fine, but you remember now, you need grass for the month of June, and June usually takes a dip anyway, in terms of growth rate and quality. So I would be wary of that. I'd be wary of going cold turkey on it, because grass is going to be worn out now in 3 weeks' time after, you know, this massive growth rate. So to be honest, this high growth rate, Jack, for me, it brings more problems in it than it, you know, it's, of course, it's good to get it. But, like, it does really impact on grass quality. And a lot of farms now, grass quality has gone to complete pot.
Aidan, I was chatting to Sean McMahon earlier, and we played a little clip after I'm finished with you. But I mean, he was saying it is variable in some parts of the country that, you know, I mean, some parts he said were short of moisture, and they really only got massive growth rates in the last week. Some of he said poor fertility, poor soil fertility, and he says they probably still haven't got the good grass growth rates. Like, so it, like, it's not blanket across the country. Everyone is getting over 100 kilos of growth per day.
I'm definitely not getting over 100, but growth is still good, you know. And I mean, even if your soil fertility is poor, like, it's still good for what you normally get, like, or, you know, good for the season anyway, let's say. So I don't think farmers be crazy too much about it. Like, you know, it's growth is good. People were saying about a bit, you know, lacking moisture. For me, I don't think there's actually a lack of moisture. It was more of a lack of softness, you know, a bit of mild weather came, that harsh easterly wind moved at the start of the month, and things just changed overnight. Like, it was a real, you know, sharp change in the seasons. You could see it so clearly, like, you know, end of April was cold and harsh, and then the 1st of May came and things just changed. And it, look, we've had savage grass growth since then.
What are guys doing, Aidan, in terms of meal feeding? Like, I mean, obviously, like, where growth rates are massive, like, I mean, so I mean, there is an opportunity there to cut meal feeding, and if you have a couple of pieces boxed off, just talk to me in terms of what guys are doing on meal feeding.
Well, I was with a discussion group. I actually had it in the paper this week, a report on it last Monday. And looked at plenty of grass on the group farms, grown really well. I think the average was over 70, but the average meal feeding level was 2 kilos, and that was ranging from 1.5 to 4 kilos per cow per day. Like, so that, you know, it's a fair range. I mean, I have to question why anyone will be feeding 4 kilos of meal when grass is flying at this time of year, especially when meal is costing 400 euros a ton. Okay, look, milk is up there as well, but I mean, the responses are so poor. Like, I mean, it's 0.7 of a liter of milk effectively for every kilo of meal you feed is a good response at this time of year. So the economics just don't make sense for me to be feeding it in the expectation of getting more milk out of cows. But I mean, the average at the group, I think, was 2 kilos per day, which is, look, it's thereabouts, I suppose. If it was a few years ago, we'd say it was too high, but we have this, it's kind of creeped into our systems that, you know, it's okay to feed a couple of kilos of meal nearly all summer long. There's an element of, you know, there's you know, paid labor and all the rest milking these cows now, and they want to make life easy for them. And look, let's face it, it is easier to get cows into the parlor if there's a bit of meal in the farm. They walk faster into the yard, and they walk faster into the parlor. So that's probably a factor as well, but you can reduce the meal and still achieve that. So, I mean, most of those batch feeders, you can feed them, you know, 1.6 kilos is the minimum feeding. But very few of those farmers now are feeding 1.6.
Yeah, okay. Aidan, you talked about that discussion group in Kilkenny, et cetera, and that kind of thing. I mean, what else stood out for you in terms of just, you know, it's a real crucial time of the year now for kind of a lot of things, breeding, you know, silage yields, obviously grass yields and meal feeding. What else kind of jumped out at you from kind of listening to the farmers across the group?
Well, one thing that shocked me straight away, Jack, and the host farmer had it as well, but about half the group now have automated heat detection aids in. Have the, you know, the collars in for heat detection. Yeah. So a massive number of group, and then, you know, last year maybe only a handful of them, if one or two members might have had them, but now about half the group have them. So that were there anyway at the meeting, like, so, and the host farmer had them as well. And look, sure, they're all raving about them, but I suppose they wouldn't say anything bad about them after buying them either. But look, I mean, it's just goes to show, I suppose, the times we're in, farmers are willing to invest in the technology if it makes life easier. Look, I don't think myself it can make any difference to submission rates or conception rates. You know, good tail paint is probably as good as what the collars are going to do. And I think, you know, those selling collars will probably say the same, but it takes the work out of it. And most farmers now are hitting into their third week of breeding. And, you know, you can see lads getting tired and people on farms getting tired, because it's a fair toll between watching heifers and watching cows. But it's so important. It's so critical. And on this farm, then, and it's effective across the group, the 6-week calving rate is declining. So 3 or 4 years ago, he was hitting almost 90%. Now he's back to 79% this year, even though his EBI for fertility has increased. So that's a worry, like, you know, and maybe that's part of the reason why some of these group members have gone down the road of automating the heat detection, just because they feel they're, maybe they're missing cows or herds that got bigger, or maybe, you know, they haven't the same labor that they'd like, or they're not on farms themselves as often either. You know, they need time off themselves, which is important too. So, yeah, multiple factors. It was just interesting. It was an interesting nugget.
And Aidan, is the 6 week measure still the real right measure? Like we'll say, or should guys now be looking at, like, some guys are coming up now, I'd say, to kind of their 3 week submission rate now, kind of this week, etc., and that kind of thing. Like, I mean, is that important, or is it the 6 week that guys need to kind of be really keeping a handle on? Or what's the kind of key fertility measure now?
Well, you definitely won't get a high 6 week if 6 week calving rate or in calf rate if your submission rate is not 90% or 90+%. Because, just, you know, if you're not submitting those cows, they're definitely not going to go in calf. So of course the submission rate is important, but generally we're finding not many, you know, we're not finding too many issues with submission rate. So these cows are, they're hitting these herds are hitting the 90% submission rate, but they're probably only getting, you know, barely 50% or even less conception rate then to that first and second service. So their 6 week in calf rate then is, you know, the mid 60s when it should be 75%. And as a result, then they're only getting 80% calving in 6 weeks. And I suppose what's bringing this home to roost, Jack, is that their replacement rate has now decreased. So when they were growing their herds, they're bringing in 25-30% heifers every year for 3 or 4 years. All those heifers were synchronized. They all calved more or less 80-90% of them calved in the first 3 weeks. And that then had a big impact on bringing their 6 week calving rate up. Look, the calving rate is still an important measure. I mean, the Chagas figures are saying that, you know, that calving rate and how much grass you're utilizing are the two main measures for profitability and spring calving grass-based farms. So it is very important. And it's not disappointing to see why it's declining. You'd have to wonder what direction is going to go in if it keeps declining. So yeah, that was a good topic for discussion. And look, there's loads of factors involved. You know, it's not just it's nutrition, genetics obviously is a big one. And you know, how you manage semen and how you handle semen and how you eat the cow all has a bearing on it.
Yeah, 100%. Aidan, earlier I had a chat with Sean McMahon and we talked all things silage and all things grass growth. So listen, let's have a listen. I'll chat to you again next week. I mean, it's fair to say, Sean, it has really kicked off right across the country now. That's grass growth I'm talking about.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jack. Yeah, grass growth has really kicked off. Very farm specific. In Monaghan here, there was one farm that grew 125 kilos on average in the last couple of days. And it's anywhere between 60, 70, 80, 90. It just depends on the farm. And a lot of farms there for a while was missing the showers. And I suppose a lack of fertilizer and a lack of moisture had just sort of knocked back growth a small bit. But listen, there's been plenty. There's been a lot of moisture has fell in the last 24 hours even. So it's all helping to I suppose, above average grass growth rates for the same year.
And I suppose, Sean, like, in fairness, it all depends too in terms of what level of artificial nitrogen has been spread up to now, you know, the kind of way, because I mean, that is a very varied picture depending on your type of farm, depending on, you know, how much nitrogen has gone out. It's, you know, it can be like some guys have as much gone out as other years, but those others only have 50% of the bag nitrogen gone out.
Yeah, Jack, it depends on volume, it depends on type of fertilizer, it depends on soil fertility, it depends on soil type. There's a load of different factors. But look, at every farmer knows their farm, and it just needs to be farm specific. And I suppose, if we're growing a lot of grass, if our demand is 50 or 60 now at the minute, and we're growing 125, 130, and a farmer doesn't want to make excess bales, there could be an opportunity to knock back on the fertilizer. So I wouldn't be afraid. It's an unusual year for fertilizer prices. So we need to sort of be a bit innovative and try out different things. And there's no point in Jimmy down the road doing something. We need to put our own plan in place and execute it.
Yeah, exactly. Look after your own business. Like, I mean, it's fair to say on some of the farms around here in North Tipperary, Sean, where I am, they're well stocked. They're growing a lot of grass. I mean, they're getting back into rotations. They're bringing it back into 16, 18 days, you know, even shorter in some cases, because, as you say, of the exceptional growth rates. They don't need necessarily to come with nitrogen straight away again after the cows, like, or they'd be putting on maybe too much nitrogen for what they need.
Yeah, potentially. And that's one thing to look out for. But I suppose this around this time of year, Jack, as well, with the rapid growth rates, sometimes the phosphorus concentration in the grass plant is reduced, and we're in fertility now, or a lot of farmers are in the middle of starting breeding. Phosphorus is very, very important for fertility. And I suppose ourselves, the technical team, and we have a consultant vet there, Bernard Forlong, we travelled across the island of Ireland there last week with all our different regions, and we were talking about, I suppose, Pica being one and fertility being another. And a lot of the farms, but 90% of the farms that we went to didn't think that they had a problem with Pica or didn't really know what it was. And then whenever we actually went out to the farm and observed the animal behaviour, a couple of the cows is over chewing ditches and lick at the bank. So it is happening. So it's just, I suppose, it's a very busy time of year. Look at the rotation length is down to 16, 17 days. The breeding season's kicking off. A lot of things happen. A lot of silage is in a lot of people's minds as well. So just, yeah. I suppose, really focus in. It's very important to get the breeding right and get that, I suppose, nailed on at this time of year.
What was Bernard suggesting in terms of that Pica piece? You know, when he saw those couple of cows picking up stones or eating ditches, is that what were they kind of recommending the farmers to do in that situation, Sean?
Yeah, so it was a mixture of a couple of different components. White Pica, of course, so it's sodium, which is salt. It can be phosphorus as well, and it's fiber. So depending on where it was getting the rain, grass dry matters are probably in the low teens. That has an effect. The forage is going through the cow that bit quicker, and salt and phosphorus. So look at your supplementing with either like a calcium phosphate block that has the sodium and the phosphorus, or Himalayan rock salt, and maybe upping the concentration in the meal, the phosphorus concentration. So there's a couple of different, management practices you can do to solve that issue.
I know one of the farms that you work closely with, Sean, is Palace Kenry Agriculture College, and obviously a lot of students, previous and past, will know the college and know what it's about. And I, you know, I've often been on the farm, obviously, there. I mean, it's a farm that has kind of turned, you know, right around in the last number of years in terms of the type of management and the type of system that they're running there on the farm.
Yeah, look, I suppose I had never been to Palace Kenry, Jack, and Derek O'Donoghue there is doing a fabulous job. I would encourage any farmer that hasn't been to try and get on the farm, whether it's an open day or a discussion group, or any young man or woman interested in agriculture. Really simple system, really focusing on labour efficiency, which is key and very important in Derek's eyes, which he's 100% right. And an excellent run farm. In 2016, Jack, there was 8 tonnes of grass that was being grown. Last year, there was 16.1 tonnes. The farm is about 95% is Everton's perfect, I suppose, for PK, and Everton's above 6.2 pH, spreading 200 kilos of nitrogen per hectare. So look, I suppose it really shows us that we can get an awful lot from the soil if we look after it. And that's what, it takes time. It takes time. Like that's 6 years, but it's paying dividends now. And I suppose they're incorporating clover whenever we were there last week. So that's something that they're dipping their toe in now. So it's just a really, really, really well-run farm. And I encourage anyone that hasn't been to go and have a look.
Yeah, no, top class. And as you say, they're looking, the vision for that is to maybe reduce the bag nitrogen another little bit, we'll say, and bring in the clover to try and generate some of that their own nitrogen on farm. That's the vision. That's the plan for the next couple of years.
That's the plan. Look at clover can fix nitrogen from the atmosphere and reduce a reliance on chemical fertilizer. They're growing 16 ton with 200 kilos of nitrogen per hectare. And there's no reason why they can't reduce that by another 25, 30 or even 50 kilos. It'll take a bit of time to get the clover incorporated. I suppose Derek was going with Fizzlet soil conditioner to really get a good establishment. Once he gets a good establishment, the aim then is to come in and graze at the 1,000s, 1,100, 1,200 and try and get it established. And then it's going to start fixing nitrogen in 12 months' time.
Yeah, the management of it is so important, Sean. When you get that clover seed out, if you allow the grass to build up, like, I mean, you're shutting off light, you're shutting off the potential of that clover getting established. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, look, Everton's management is key, Jack. And I suppose at this time of year, there's farmers trying a lot of things, a lot of new things now. Like, I suppose to a lot of farmers, clover is a new innovation, but it's not really. It's been around for a long time, but there's a renewed interest in it. So it takes time. It takes money to establish clover and get it worked into the sward. So we need to put a lot of a lot of time and a lot of preparation. There's no point in going in and oversowing clover on a pH of 5.5, 5.6, 5.7. That's not going to work. So we need to take time to plan. We need to take time to execute. And then we need to take time to manage it carefully then. And they will reap the rewards going forward.
Sean, I mean, silage fever is hitting some parts of the country, like, you know, down south, definitely. I know there's a good bit, and even up around me here, there's a lot of silage down in the last couple of days, like we say, as you say, where the moisture was there, where the nitrogen was there, and where yields have been good, you know. But I mean, from you're in and out through a lot of farms, like, I mean, do you think, you know, dairy farmers or livestock farmers in general have as good a handle on kind of silage and silage yields as they should have?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose, Jack, it's not that I have a bee in my bonnet over this one, but if I went into a tillage farm in the morning, that farmer would be able to tell me field specific what crop was on that field for the last 5 years and what tons it was. And not an awful lot of dairy farmers would know how much tons came off their silage ground last year. So I suppose it's like this, as the saying goes, if we don't manage it, or if we don't measure it, we can't manage it. So going out and taking a yield off your silage ground, and keeping a record of it, it's very, very important, because we could have a farmer growing 50 or cutting 50 acres of silage with an average ton of say 5 ton on average, right? But can we cut back to maybe 40 acres or 30 acres and grow 8 ton? Yeah. You know, so yeah. we need to track it. Just because we have perfect soil pH, just because we have index 3s for P and K, paddock 1 for silage could be growing 5 ton, paddock 2 could be growing 8 ton, and it could be compaction that's the issue. So we need to see what we have, and then we need to benchmark it, what's happening on our farm, and then what's in the bottom 10%, 15%, 20%, we need to put a plan in place to rectify those feeds.
Yeah, and Sean, like, I mean, the reason why you think of kind of, as you say, taking that yield piece, like it's to kind of, so that you can replace the nutrients, so that you can keep it right. Like, I mean, that you don't want to be kind of taking the bank of nutrients that's the out of the crop that's coming, the bank of nutrients that's coming with the crop out of the soil. You don't want to be, you want to be replacing what you're taking out. That's why you want to get into the yield piece.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose for instance, Jack, right, every ton that we take off is 25 kilos a K, right? So if we're putting out 3,000 gallons of slurry, of tick slurry, 7% slurry, that's covering a 5-ton crop. But if we're taking a 7, 8, or 9-ton crop, there could be 100 kilos on that first cut of silage that's coming off that we're not putting on. And if we're putting out, say, going slurry twice, that could be covering a 10-ton crop, but we might have took a 15-ton crop off. And then farmers are scratching their heads saying, but it's getting slurry, it's getting all the nutrients, and soil fertility is declining. The reason why it's declining is because we're not measuring what's coming off, and over time, you're going to gradually suck the nutrients out of the soil, and that's going to, in time, reduce the yield. Yeah, so by putting a plan in place, very simple, go out and take a cut and weigh, or get in touch with your grass and agroagronomist. We will go out, we'll take a nitrates test to make sure it's ready for cutting, sugars test, and a yield test, and then we can put a plan in place from there.
That's what I was going to ask you, Sean, last question, in terms of how you're actually measuring yield. Some glad to be counting trailers and putting it over weigh bridges and all this kind of stuff. You're actually using the cut and weigh measure, i.e. for silage yields, because it is difficult. There's a lot of grass there. You know what I mean? It's more than typically in a grazing such a scenario. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so in any particular field, Jack, we would go out and we'd take 3 random cut and weigh tests just and take our average. As you said, the weighing, yeah, look, a lot of farmers, I've been involved with a few farmers there that has digesters and that are measuring the grass coming into the digesters. Then you have your tillage farmers that have the scales as well. So that's a very extreme scenario, but very simple, 3 cutting ways, 10 minute job, write it down. That's our figure for our first cut. You can benchmark it then with our second cut, add the two together, see what we're taking off, what has come back on, and then we can make a decision on how much, say, K or P has to go on at the end of the year to balance the books.
Some very timely advice from Sean McMahon, Grassland Agro, in terms of nitrogen and silage and what to do at this time of the year. As Sean talked about, silage is kicking in a gear. Earlier again, I had a chat with Michael Murray from ESB Networks about some of the safety issues around silage gear coming into fields and those wires and poles in farms all over the country. Let's have a listen. Michael, good to have you on the show once again. The last time we talked, we probably had a nice chat around buildings and that whole general safety issue around farms. It's fair to say, Michael, the grass is growing and the silage season is upon us, I suppose. It started in some places, especially up north and down south. But over the coming weeks, it's going to get a lot busier out on farms with heavy machinery and particularly silage gear. Michael, I mean, from your experience in the industry and from what you've heard, like, I mean, in terms of some of the risks that farmers are taking with live wires and with ESB poles, etc., and that kind of thing, is there actually, you know, a lot of messing going on in some places, or have you heard of kind of, I suppose, stories of guys trying to do their own thing to fix a problem or to try and make it easier?
Oh, Jack, good to be back on Tech Talk. And great to see the weather picking up. I suppose, Jack, to answer your question there, look, the vast majority of people go about their job safely. You know, that no one goes out to break anything or interfere with anything or cause any harm or do anything dangerous. But look, as the activity increases and the speed, you know, lot of hours, a lot of work to get through, lads might take shortcuts. They feel maybe they can't wait for ESP to get out or whatever. And yeah, we have seen a lot of incidents, not too many, thankfully. But I know one does come to mind where it was on all over social media, and that's how we became aware of it, where a farmer or contractor had used the front loader of the tractor to push against a pole, a medium voltage pole, so it'd be 10 or 20,000 volts, to take the sag off the line so a forage harvester could go underneath. And he got under the first time, but on the way back, Jack, he didn't. And the sparks and the splash, I'd say, made him think twice. And he stopped in his tracks. But very, very dangerous situation. And thankfully for him now, that line would have tripped out and the line didn't come down itself. But, you know, if those lines come down on machinery like that, you know, it can be fatal. And that's something we'd ask guys to be thinking of. You know, it's more haste, less speed is what that fellow is doing,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, and I suppose you have to look at it from, and I'm sure you well understand it, Michael. They were probably saying, listen, if I ring someone here, they're going to be a half day before they come out, this, that, and the other. I mightn't get someone on the phone, etc., and that kind of thing. And hey, listen, we're going to try and do something ourselves, but you really are playing with fire doing something like that. And like, surely, Michael, there is a solution there in terms of what they could have done in that instance that would have recognized that someone could have, is it the case that someone would have come out if that was dialed in to try and help the situation, Michael?
Absolutely, Jack. It's like everything. Plan ahead and prevention is better than cure. All of those old sayings. But if they knew they had a new bit of machinery or something else, they weren't sure, ring ESP Networks. Tell them, look, we're in a field where we're worried about the line. And the local team will make arrangements and put arrangements in place to allow the lads to do that work safely. You know, we're not there to hinder farmers. We're there to help and to allow farmers and contractors to do the work safely. You know, that's our number one priority, is safe, public's safety, safety to the public, should I say. And, you know, maintaining supply as well. I mean, yeah, whatever about the fatal, the safety, which is number one, like, they knock out that power for the community. That could be, you know, the local hospital. It could be It could be the dairy enterprise next door.
Well, not, you know, you said it, because it actually happened here last weekend, local to me, Michael, and something happened again. I don't know what the exact issue, and it might have just been a kind of, I call it a maintenance piece, but 25 of the local farmers here, the power went at 5 o'clock in the evening, and there was a lot of them are obviously halfway through milking, etc., and that kind of thing. But like, again, that's the issue. You know, you get a problem when you don't need a problem. Whereas if there was an advance notice put in and someone had contacted ESB Networks, those 25, 30 people around me here in North Tipperary, they wouldn't have been affected at all. And the issue could have been kind of smoothed over.
Absolutely, Jack. And that's it. You know, I mean, we distribute electricity to the whole community. You know, we serve the community in making sure that electricity is distributed around safely. You always have it. Everyone takes it for granted because you just flick on the light switch. You take it for granted it's there, you know. And when it's not, we all know, no more than the likes of broadband from working from home, you all know how tough and how much imposition that can put on you, particularly when you have plans made and you've work to get done, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that, in my local instance, that like it, that took 3 hours for the crew, and like that, like that's a real, I call that a relatively short time. But it, like, you know, if an accident happens, it took, but within 3 hours they were back up and going. The power was back in, and the milking could, you know, 10 o'clock at night. There was a lot of farmers around here milking. But you know, if the piece had been prevented, well, then that whole disturbance for that 25-30 families locally would have been, would have been a lot less. Is there like you talked about prevention is better than cure, Michael, and obviously that's the case. Like, I mean, is there a couple of kind of prevention tips, like, you know what I mean, that you would say now as we gear up as for kind of near silage season and bigger machinery, as you said, the machinery and the harvesters are getting bigger every year, and that's an issue as well, you know. But is there a couple of kind of prevention tips that you know are good messages that guys should kind of consider now at this time of the year before they get really busy?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I suppose, Jack, most guys, I'm sure, go back into the same fields most of the time, you know. But, you know, it's around looking around and identifying where the hazards are. You know, it's doing a dynamic risk assessment for a contractor or some or a farmer when you're working along. You know, look out for where the poles are. Look where the wires are. Look where the stays are. You know, mental picture of where they are. You know, communicate them to the guys on the team as well. There's more than one person there. You know, you need to... It's everybody's responsibility, you know, to maintain a safe working environment and all that. It's not, you know, it's not just one individual. Everyone needs to highlight the hazards to everyone else, you know.
Yeah.
But it's big, you know, steering clear of poles and stay wires. Looking out and not raising booms or tipper lorries or cranes or putting up ladders or scaffolding or telescopic handlers near overhead wires. You know, it's removing that hazard from the work environment by not getting into the hazard zone as such.
Yeah.
And not tipping anything or storing. We've a lot of stories of you know, tipping or storing items underneath electricity wires, you know, which again creates a hazard where there wasn't one beforehand, because you're putting the wires within reach or putting machinery operating in there where maybe it doesn't need to be or shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And a big one then as well, you know, where possible, and I know it's not always possible, but to avoid crossing beneath electricity wires so that you work parallel to them. So you go into the fields that maybe look, that the less times you cross under the wire, the less of the hazard you're encountering. So, you know, working parallel where possible is always a good practice as well, you know.
And Michael, as you say, even with the best prevention dynamic plan, we'll say, or with the best care, I mean, accidents do happen. I mean, if an accident or if the worst does happen and a machine strikes a line or whatever, like, I mean, what's the first thing that the farm owners and I suppose those working on the farm and those driving the tractors, what's the first thing that they should do when something like that happens?
I suppose, look, if the worst does happen and they hit a pole or they strike wires, is to stay in the cab. That's number one. You're safer in the cab than jumping out. If you do have to jump out, I suppose it's around jumping at least 5 meters clear. But once you know that you've hit a wire, it's ring ESB Networks on 1800. 372999. That's our emergency number. And that's a 24/7, 365, 365 days a year service. So ring them with a GPS or an air code. If they risk assess the call, they can make arrangements to have that line switched out and make it safe before even our network technician is on site. So that's really important to give the GPS or the air code. So you can get that off your phone or if you know the address of the place you're on. But as I'm saying there, it's keeping everyone else clear as well is another big thing. So, you know, if you're in the cab, the last thing you want to do is have fellas coming over, seeing what's going on, you know. Because if they touch that machinery and that wire is live, they can get a shock. They could get electrocuted or that's not what we're looking for. So keeping people clear as well. Now, if you do, as I was saying about jumping, if you exit the cab, because you think it's going to go on fire or whatever, and you need to jump clear. So don't hold the handle and step down because you complete the circuit to ground. So jumping clear as far as you can and taking very short little steps or little bunny hops away till you're 5 meters clear. And again, always keeping people clear and maintaining that, keeping them clear until ESB networks arrive. So never assume anything is dead or that it's safe to return to the cab or anything like that to get a phone or a jacket. You know, you stay away and never approach it again, as I said, until ESB Networks tells you it's safe to do so. That's the big thing. So it's the emergency. It's the emergency number 1-800-372-999, and let us know straight away. That's the big key one.
And Michael, this is so important for ESB Networks that phone line is manned 24/7. We'll say to be able to answer. And as you say, and I didn't even think of it, you know, that they can actually divert power from those lines even before there's someone from ESB Networks on site.
They can indeed, Jack. That's the number one is around that public safety. And I mean, they will drop a parish, a town, no problem. Depends on what area. The more exact the information we can get, the more precise we can be with de-energizing the network. But again, we rely on getting the information as fast as we can from the people who are involved in the incident or someone who witnesses the incident, that we need to know where it is and what's happened. You know, that's the key bit. And the GPS and the air code are great for that, you know.
100%, and everyone has the phones now in their exactly. pockets. So there should be no excuses. Listen, absolutely crucial information at this time of the year when farmers are getting very busy and more machinery and more big machinery is getting into fields. Thanks a million for your time. I'm sure we'll chat again soon. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Aidan, Adam and Darren, and also to Michael Murray from ESB Networks for those crucial tips on safety as silage fever kicks up a gear, and also to Sean McMahon from Grassland Agro talking about what is happening grass growth on farms right around the country. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcasts. Shout out once again to our supporters AXA, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.